Hi, Donnie. How are you?
I am good. Hello, Mara.
Ready good. For and another welcome episode. To another episode of A Real Page Turner. And we are very excited today to welcome a special guest, Stacy Mawuna. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Mara. Hi, Donnie. How are you?
Great. We're so pleased for you to join us today. And Stacy is a motivational speaker and author of a book called The Executed Vision. She is a motivational speaker and owner of The Prepped Mom, a lifestyle company. And she is passionate about working with individuals and organizations to envision, plan, and execute changes necessary to have the greatest impact on the areas they desire most. So welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And Stacy and I've known each other, I feel like forever now. So a long time. Yeah. So we are excited about our book today. We are going to do the 1992 Terry McMillan book, Waiting to Exhale. And talk about the movie of the same name. So this book was, as I said, written in 1992. And Terry McMillan's written many books, one such as Has Stella Got Her Groove Back? So she's written quite a few. And Donnie, tell us a little bit about the movie.
Okay, so the book was adapted into a film, the 1995 film, also called Waiting to Exhale. It was written by Terry McMillan, as well as Ronald Bass. The director was someone who's more known for acting, but he made his feature directorial debut with this, Forrest Whitaker. And it also and it stars Whitney Houston and Angela Bassett and Loretta Devine and Leila Rochon as four young adult friends in their 30s, mid to late 30s, early 40s, maybe, navigating their life.
Yeah. So, Stacy, you actually suggested this book when we were talking about doing an episode. Why did you choose this book?
Oh, thanks for asking. For a couple of reasons. I think one of the main reasons that I chose the book is because there's been a resurgence of all kinds of 90s sitcoms and movies that have been making a new debut. And my children constantly come back to me and say, Mom, there's a new movie. And I'm thinking, it's not new, it's old. And so recently there was a conversation at my daughter's school, and it was about a book. And it was a book that had some graphic language and some other things, and a lot of the parents were up in arms. And so it made me think about myself in high school and some of the books that I read. And one of the first books I remember reading that was a little risque was Terry McMillan's Waiting to Exhale. And then I remember going to my first movie with a group of girlfriends in 1995, believe it or not, and it was for the grand opening of the same movie. So I think all of it is coming full circle, where there's certainly movies that are coming back, sitcoms, and also in my own personal life, I'm starting to realize that there are certain conversations that keep on going and keep changing and evolving. And I think this book kind of sums up some of it.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned it was like considered risque, because I didn't think the book was that risque, but I thought the movie was. Like, I was like, oh, you kind of earned your R rating in this one. But I didn't really think like the book was like all that, but I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So did you like, what is your overall, like, do you like the book or the movie better or just different?
I tend to lean towards books all the time, but I think for this one, it's probably the movie. And the main reason is because of the feelings and the emotions that are tied to it for me personally, right? It's definitely nostalgia, definitely, you know, takes me back to being a teenager and being able to travel by myself with my friends to go see a movie for the really for the first time without my parents, and what it was like waiting in line for my ticket, where the line was wrapped around the corner. You know, so it definitely evokes a lot of good memories. And also it was kind of my first time being privy to what I call girlfriend conversation, you know, the conversations that your moms and your sisters and your cousins and all of those have. And when you're a kid, it's a big deal, because usually what happens, or at least this is what happened in my household, is when we sat down in the kitchen or wherever we were at family gatherings, all the cousins and the aunties and the girlfriends and all the people that I kind of wanted to be like would gather around, and they would start to talk, you know, things that children shouldn't hear. And just if I sat quiet enough and just for a moment pretended to do something else, they almost forgot I was there for maybe like 2 minutes. So I got a little bit of, you know, the inside scoop or the tea. But the movie Waiting to Exhale really was a representation of my aunties, my cousins, my you know, big cousin girlfriends, and, you know, all the people that I looked up to as a 15-year-old girl who were then in their 30s, and they seemed to have it going on. And you know, I was able to be a part of that conversation that, of course, and, you know, as I was being raised, I wasn't a part of that conversation because kids were not to be around. So it kind of made me feel like I got to know my parents and some of the older women in my family through that lens, because those characters represented a little piece of them.
That's interesting. And you said that, you just took me back to like my own like teenage years, like younger, and my mother and my aunt sitting in the kitchen table, and we'd want to know what they were talking about. And we'd take the tape recorder and put it underneath the kitchen table and hit record and play at the same time to try to like get some of their conversation.
Yeah, I remember the tape recorder. Oh boy, that could be a whole nother episode, right?
That's why you said that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so true. We always wanted to know what they were talking about. And, yeah, you know, sure. I'm sure today we didn't find it that interesting, but yeah. So Donnie, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, I thought it was very interesting. Obviously, I have a different perspective coming into this. And considering the fact that I was only 7 years old when this movie came out, I did not go see it in theaters. You know, I don't know why. I don't know why my parents didn't take me, but I digress. But yeah, I did enjoy it. It was, the performances really stuck out, especially Angela Bassett. I think, you know, she's excellent at everything she does. I watch her every week on the show 911. So I'm a fan of hers, and she really, like, you know, gave a very strong performance. Like, she was, you know, really, like, in the depths of her character, like, as she's going through, like, navigating this, you know, very, very difficult path in her storyline.
Yeah, I said Angela Bassett can do no wrong. But I didn't actually know this was a book, Stacey, until you said this. And it's funny because I was telling my sister today what we were doing, what book we were reading. She goes, I didn't know that was a book. She's like, that was one of my favorite movies. And then she brought up something I didn't think about. She's like, that soundtrack was like the greatest soundtrack of all time. She's like, it was playing in my dorm room, our dorm room, all the time in college. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's so funny. Like, I didn't even remember that. But she's like, that was like one of the greatest movies.
It was. And I got to agree with your sister. That soundtrack was awesome. There are songs that I still listen to that are from that soundtrack. And that very, very few records that come out now can I listen to from start to finish. But that was probably one of the soundtracks that I could listen to from start to finish, because each of those songs told a story. And, you know, as a young girl growing up, and even now as an adult, there's something that's applicable in each of those songs.
Yeah, it was interesting. But what I was telling, what Donnie and I were talking about, I said the one tool that I'll call it a tool that I thought that worked really well in the movie that they didn't do in the book was the DJ being the narrator. And I loved that. And I thought that was really cool because it just like gave it a different, it kind of brought it all together. And I really liked it. And I liked the way they bookended the story in the movie, New Year's Eve to New Year's Eve. And they didn't really do that in the book. You know, it was kind of, it was obviously more open-ended and they had more time to play with, but I liked that in the movie. And I don't always like when they change something so much, but I really thought that worked because I liked the DJ, like the guy on the radio. I thought he was a riot. Like, and I really liked that aspect of it.
Yeah, I would agree. I like the timeline too in the movie because, and the reason that it kind of spoke to me is because I oftentimes do reflective work where I kind of think about where I was a year ago. A lot of people do that, right? And I think that the movie going from one year to the next, there was so much that happened in that one year and there was so much that changed. And it was just a reminder that even as we go through life, you know, nothing is as good as or as bad as it seems in the moment, right? And there's things that other people go through, that you go through, but at the end, you know, there's change and you either learn from it, right? Or you get lost in it. And these women all learned from the things that they were going through. And I think one of the lessons that I definitely took away from that is that when you're in the middle of whatever it is that's happening in your life, whether it's amazing or whether it's, you know, really bad, you know, it's important to know that that moment is just that. It's not going to be that way forever. And you got to pull from what you can.
Yeah. Donnie, what, we were talking about one other, I thought, so as much as I liked, you know, my general with the movies and the books, and Donnie and I have this discussion all the time, is that, you know, a book, you get so much more backstory and so much of what's going on, right? And for me, like, the movie was more, I don't want to say surface level, but, you know, Gloria doesn't have a heart attack in the movie, which is interesting because they kind of like lead you up to that. Although, you know, I could see why they did it, but she doesn't have a health crisis in the movie. And they don't ever talk about AIDS or HIV, which is kind of a big undertone of the book when they talk about her partner who doesn't come back to the salon and then other people are afraid of it. And it's kind of reflective of what the, you know, the late 80s and 90s of, you know, people's fear of that. And I thought that was really interesting. And they, I mean, they did, obviously it's a bigger storyline that they can't just kind of sprinkle in the movie. And I think the movie was really just focused on the relationship of the four girls and some trial, you know, trials and tribulations. But I thought that was interesting that they kind of, you know, the book goes into so much, I think, like their deeper fears, for lack of a better word. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. Because it, like, you know, it was interesting with like how films are constructed, you know, that are based off of something else, you know, mainly books, and how, you know, and what does get cut out and, you know, the focus of it. And you could definitely see that the focus of the film was on the relationships and the, you know, and the women and their personal struggles. And, you know, like the book took on more of an activist type tone, you know, and like really like talked about, you know, deep-seated issues. And, you know, I don't think like either, you know, I don't think either is better or worse for it. You know, I think the book, you know, book did a great job of, you know, exploring these issues, and the movie did a great job in, you know, in its focus on the relationships. So it is very interesting, you know, balancing these two mediums in this regard.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, if we look at the timing of the book and the characters that were portrayed on the screen, one of the things is if you just think about what was happening in the 90s, right? So you've got this, you know, these 70s and 80s babies who have gone to college and have gotten an education, and now they're in their 30s and they are successful. And it was intentional, I think, also at that time that they were Black, right? They were Black women. And that was a very different lens, right, or prism, you know, that we were looking through, because the story hadn't necessarily been told from that perspective, right? The narrative, especially around in the 90s, that was really the first big screenplay that I can remember where you had this upper middle class of African-American women who were dealing with just regular problems, right? Marriages falling apart, or, you know, finding success in life, but in work, but not in love, you know, dealing with a divorce and trying to raise a son or child independently. So it was definitely, I think, intentional to ensure that the focus remained on what it was, which was the importance of relationships, especially at that time, and portraying those characters from a Black woman's perspective, that it wasn't just, even though the characters were chosen and were Black women, it was a woman thing, right? It was a relationship thing. And I think that that's probably, you know, where the, and I've never written a screenplay before, but I would assume that when you're adopting a book from a screenplay from a book, there's certain pieces that you really want to convey to the audience. There's certain messages, and that surely is one of the messages that came through when I saw the movie. That was different than the book.
Yeah. And I thought the one, you know, and I liked that they took the one part out, because they took out the part where Savannah goes to Las Vegas and she has, and if she meets that guy that she thinks is the one, Charles, right? And then she comes back and doesn't hear from it. It never goes anywhere in the book. And I was like, well, what was the point? Like, for me, it was just, the point was, here's another person you can't trust, right? And I said to Donnie, like, I don't know. Did they just need a few more words or pages that we created that scene in the book? And I was glad they left that out of the movie, because like the major storyline was her relationship with the married man and then finding her self-worth to kick him on the way and know that he wasn't going to leave his wife. And for me, that was like the major character development in that story. And I was glad that they kind of left that kind of side part out, because it was kind of extraneous, I thought. So I liked that she did that in the movie, because, you know, really the kicker in that one was her telling Kenneth, his name was Kenneth, right? Kenneth, like, kind of where to go. And I liked
which
that.
Which is what we were all yelling in the theater, like, kick him to the curb, you know? And that's kind of what happens is you see women who are, you know, we've all had that friend, maybe not, but who comes and says, oh, well, it's going to happen. He's going to change, maybe. And you're thinking the whole time, he is not. So I'm thinking a lot of women were in that movie theater yelling, like, yes, you finally had the courage to do it.
Yeah. And the other thing you mentioned when you were talking about, like, real, like, issues, and I don't know if this was like ahead of her time, but you talked a lot about, you know, two of the characters were taking care of their parent, which is interesting because you hear a lot of that people in, you know, that, what do they call it? The sandwich generation. They're taking care of their kids and they're taking care of their parents. Right. And that, I think that's like a newer term. And I thought that was really interesting that, you know, also showed how they were taking care of other people. You know, they were earning their money and they were, you know, helping their parents and, you know, they had real issues, right? Like having to put a father who had Alzheimer's in a nursing home. Like that was really, I think, hard topics. They had real things going on that was interesting, but I really enjoyed those storylines. And can I say, I had no idea Donald Faison was in this movie. When I saw the beginning opens up with the credits, I'm like, Donald Faison? When he came in, yeah. I was like, oh. And I had to look to see which was first. And this was, I believe this was ahead of Clueless, right, Donnie? Was this ahead of Clueless? Or was it after Clueless?
Yeah, I think they came out the same year. They both came out in 95.
I'm like, Donald Faison had a big year. And I,
yeah, Clueless came out about 5 months earlier. That was a summer movie. And Wind Exhale was around Christmas time.
And I love Donald Faison. So I was very excited to see him as Terry. I was like, oh my gosh, he's great.
I love his character. And I'm sure that every mother's nightmare is walking in on their son or, you know.
Yeah.
That scene. I have two boys and I'm thinking, oh boy, I hope I never, ever have to do that.
I know. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And I loved Gloria's character. Like I loved everything about her. I loved the relationship with Marvin. And it was like this slow friendship that, you know, I loved that character and her kind of where she went and Marvin's, you know, kind of role in that.
I'm a fan of Loretta Devine, period. I think that she just has such a wholesome personality that she portrays on the screen. And I love the scene where I think it's the first time she's meeting him and she walks over across the street. And after they end their conversation, she's like, oh my gosh, I think she was worried about like her butt jiggling or something. Like, I hope he's not watching me. And she turns around and she's like, oh, he's watching. I thought that was awesome.
I did too.
It was kind of that self-conscious. She was feeling self-conscious, but then when she looked back, she kind of owned it. And, you know, I think that was a cool scene. I love that.
And
part.
I liked that they didn't focus on her weight in the movie as much as the book. Because the book, you could tell she's more self-conscious about her weight. And I think she's written as heavier. I think she's probably written as a heavier woman, where I wouldn't call Gloria's character really heavy in the movie, you know. I'm glad that they did that because I think that was smart.
Yeah, and just speaking back to like Donald Faison, it's like I definitely like the son a lot better in the movie than in the book because he's like, you know, in the book he's like very rude and like commenting about his mother's weight and the same things. And I was like, oh, I was reading that, I was like, that's terrible. That's terrible. And, you know, so they kind of cleaned him up and, you know, niced him up a little in the movie. And one of the, like, it's a real simple part, like in the film that I love, like at his mother's birthday and when he's just playing the saxophone outside, and then when they're all sleeping on the couch and he gives her the, you know, little kiss and then tucks her in, kind of. It's a very sweet, you know, mother son moment. You know, I really like their relationship in the movie. So
yeah, I love that whole scene in the book and the movie when they're, you know, kind of drunk on champagne and they're sprawled out on the couch. You know, it's just really funny because, you know, you can think of those times maybe that something similar has happened with your friends. And, you know, it's just kind of funny that that's where the night, you know, kind of took you. And I thought that was really, I liked that scene in both. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I think too. I think I think the other Keller, Leila Rashawn, the character that she played, I thought it was interesting because when the guy was stealing her money, remember, and she was in denial. So you have this successful woman, you know, she's holding it down at work and she's doing all this wonderful stuff. And then all of a sudden she's got this guy at home that she's allowing to steal her money and, you know, pretends that he's not a drug addict, you know? And I think that just, it's interesting because there is that balance, you know, maybe, you know, we don't necessarily as all women have a drug addict, you know, stealing from us at home, at least I hope not. But, you know, it's interesting because you have kind of this outward appearance, right? And then everybody's got stuff at home, you know, regardless of what the stuff is. And so I thought that that was a real, you know, it was relatable in the sense that everybody's got something that they deal with. And it doesn't matter who you are, or how perfect you have it put together. There's something that you deal with.
Yeah, I liked. And I liked in the movie, the relationship between Savannah and Robin, because Robin kind of gives her, I mean, Savannah thinks Robin is completely bonkers. But I like, you know, Robin kind of gave her the push to get rid of Kenneth, saying like, he's not going to leave. I like, because Russell is married and the thing who she says she's with, and then she's pregnant, but she kind of gives Savannah the push to get out of there and like shares her knowledge, which I don't believe happens in the book. So I really did, like, I liked their relationship. And Dottie, you mentioned the one thing that I thought was funny about Robin's character, the one with the focus on astrology.
Yeah. Throughout the book, you know, it's pretty frequently cited. Like, you know, she talks about astrology and the different signs and who's compatible with not. And that's really not a focus in the movie at all. And except like just one part, early on in the film, I think when her character's first introduced and she says something about a man being a Pisces. And I took offense to that because I am a Pisces. So I and you are too, Mara. So, yeah. And, you know, and it kind of felt like a kind of inside joke for the book readers. Like, it's like, you know, and I'll notice it like in starting since we started this podcast and reading the books and watching the movies. And sometimes you'll see, you know, they'll cut out, you know, obviously lots of a book, you know, to create the movie. And but sometimes you'll have like little sprinkles, you know, and references to, you know, things in the book. So it's almost like they're winking at us like, yeah, I know. I know you guys have been reading the book. So here's a little, you know, we'll throw you a bone a little for that. So I don't know if that's the intention or something, but it seems like that's what I took it as.
Yeah. And the Whitney Houston reference too, right? They're listening to a song by Whitney Houston in the book. And then she ends up playing the character.
Yeah. It's like, you know, and obviously that happens because these books, they were in before the movie. So, you know, I don't think anyone outside of the most conceited authors out there probably are writing a book and thinking that this will certainly make a film. But, you know, obviously, you know, the film comes after in most cases. And then, so we've seen that a lot. We've seen that, actually in our podcast, this is the third instance we've seen of that. The first was in This Is Where I Leave You, when they mentioned Jane Fonda in it, and she winds up playing the mother in that. And then Bridget Jones's Diary, they mentioned both Hugh Grant and Colin Firth in it, in the book, and they wound up playing characters in the movie. So it's very...
So there you go. Write a book and drop someone's name, and then maybe it's like manifesting, right? Maybe it'll come through.
Yeah.
So any other thoughts or points of interest that you guys wanted to talk about?
I think that, you know, it's...
We kind of covered the characters, right? Most all of the characters. There wasn't anybody else that kind of stood out to me.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited, Stacey, that you wanted to do this book, because I, like my sister, I had really no idea that it was a book. And after I watched the movie, I said to Dottie, I don't know that I ever saw this movie. Maybe it's been on TV and I've caught parts of it, but I don't think I ever saw the whole movie unless I saw it back in the 90s and I forgot about it, because the only one that... And I didn't realize this was the same woman who wrote How Stella Got Her Groove Back, because that's one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, and I absolutely love that one. And Angela Bassett's in that one, too. So I'm so glad you recommended this one, because I had not read it or remember seeing it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you guys were open to it for sure, because like I said, I had forgotten about a lot. So many of the books that I read in the 90s and early 2000s and in the book, in the movies. But this one in particular, just because we had that instance, you know, at my kid's school, made me think, what was I reading when I was 15? You know,
can you tell us what book they were talking about? What was the book that was the debate?
You know what? I can't. I can't remember it. There were two in particular. One was reference like a LGBTQ encounter. And so folks were feeling like that was too much. And then there was another one, but I can't remember the names of the books, unfortunately. But yeah, I was just thinking, you know, what was I reading when I was 15? And I read all kinds of stuff, you know. I did, you know, there was a rule in my house that as long as you were reading, it was fine. You know, you could read whatever you wanted. And so I took advantage of that. And this was just one of those movies that one of those books that I remembered literally as I was going back and forth to high school, catching the bus in Philly. You know, I would miss my stop sometimes because I'd be so engrossed in the book. And so it was definitely one of the movies and the books that came to mind for sure when I thought about being a teenager and remembering being able to see a book come to life on the screen.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And listener, I hope you enjoyed our conversation, and keep reading.
And keep watching.